Hey, this week we've pulled Harriet out of ISO. We've let her out. She's safe to talk. We're going to do a podcast. We've got a really cool topic, five female nutrition myths. And Harriet, how are you?
Hey, well, thanks, Greg. I'm out of isolation, but I'm up in Cairns, so very sunny over here. But I'm definitely looking forward to covering off on some of these topics.
Well, let's get into it.
Welcome to the Body Science Podcast, bringing you everything you need, want, and should know about health, fitness, nutrition, and training. As always, the information contained in this podcast is for the information purposes only and is not designed to diagnose or be prescriptive to treat, prevent, or manage any injury, disease, or other health-related condition.
Hey guys, this week's podcast is brought to you by the BSC Collagen Low Carb Protein Bar. It will be available in Woolworths in the sport and diet section. Harriet, we put 5 grams of tenderfoot collagen in there just to make it different to everything else in the market, and we've kept it low carb, high protein.
That's really great news. I like that it's a portable source of protein. It's got that clinical dose of the tenderfoot, which has been involved in some really great studies. So it's a really great way of supporting your tendons and ligaments whilst also having a delicious treat on the go.
And the extra good thing, tenderfoot has just been voted the sports nutrition ingredient of the year.
That's a pretty good title.
Not bad at all. It's available in a bar. Get them at Woolworths. Harriet likes them.
Delish.
Welcome to Body Science HQ, the world of fit, happy, healthy, and we're going to talk female nutrition myths with dietitian to the stars, Harriet Walker. How are you, Harriet?
Hey, well, thanks, Greg. I'm doing well in the sunshine up here.
How's ISO life treating you?
Oh, man, it's been like a, couldn't have predicted it if I tried. Pretty much out the other end now, a lot of disruption, but I feel like, you know, I'm going to really appreciate the gym when I go back. Never going to whinge about the warm-up.
Are people still talking to their dietitians during ISO?
There was a couple of weeks there where they were a bit reluctant, but now as we come out of isolation period, I think people are getting very excited to have a chat to me about re-establishing some healthier habits that might have gone out the window during isolation.
Get off the fork and keep the fridge shut.
Yeah, Tuesday wines are no longer a thing, guys. I'm sorry.
School night, stop it. So you've pulled a topic up. You've gone through and had a chat to the customer service team and what type of things are being asked, and you've pulled 5 female nutrition myths.
Yeah, absolutely.
So let's start with the first one. You need to do fasted cardio.
Yeah, so this is a good one, and it's covered in previous podcasts. Dr. Mack, we covered off on a little bit of this one, but it's still definitely a topic that confuses people and then still gets asked. So when people are still asking the question, we, you know, should run over it again, perhaps from a couple of different angles. Needing to do fasted cardio, and I'm assuming that these people are looking to drop a little bit of body fat. I think that's the reason why people look at...
I think you nailed that on the head there, Harriet.
Yeah, they're trying to, you know, get rid of a bit of extra body fat, and rumor has it that you have to do that fasting because it'll enhance fat oxidation, which is actually true. It will enhance fat oxidation whilst you're doing the slow, steady state exercise, or if there's no other substrates there to be used, we will use body fat as energy. However, and this is a big caveat to this, you know, we might be increasing fat oxidation during the training bout that we're doing. However, across the 24-hour period, this doesn't necessarily mean that at the end of the day, we will have lost weight unless we're also in a calorie deficit. So it's the calorie deficit that is the most important thing for weight loss. So if you are overeating your calories and doing fasted cardio, you're burning calories, but you're still in a surplus, you're not going to lose any body fat because there's no deficit there. This has been studied actually quite comprehensively, this debate, the fasted cardio versus fed cardio. And there's a really nice study by Brad Schoenfeld and his team, and it was done in 2014. It looked at fasted cardio versus fed cardio. I had 20 females do this. So this is really good for this population. This actually specifically studies this demographic. And they look at 1 hour of cardio 3 days a week. They had customized diet according to the individual's need. They were all the participants were in a 500 calorie deficit. Early morning training, they all had matched protein as well. So they tried to control for all the variables good that study. Might interrupt with this. Yeah. So it was really well designed. And what they found that there was no significant, all participants, you know, saw changes in their body weight, but there was no significant difference between the groups. So people who did fed cardio in the morning versus the people who did fasted cardio, they all lost weight together. However, there was no significant difference from doing fasted cardio on top of, you know, being a calorie deficit.
So in this research project, did they actually do fasted cardio, or did they just do cardio before eating in the morning?
Well, that's a good question. I think it was the last meal was the night before. Mm-hmm. So again, it probably wasn't, or depending, it was after dinner, after a sleep. So we're assuming that there's probably maybe like a 10-hour period. What it isn't indicating is it was low glycogen or low energy availability. So we don't actually know what the actual energy status of the person was. They could have had full muscle glycogen even though they'd slept overnight. So that's, again, that was one of the points that Dr. Mack also highlighted, was the fact that when people think they're doing fasted cardio, they're probably actually not
just
completely depleted.
I feel hungry cardio.
Yeah, it's just like a bit uncomfortable cardio or, you know, whatnot. So it's hardio cardio.
Do you know what the name of that podcast we did with Dr. Mack was?
I think it was a Myth
Fat Loss Myths. Yeah.
Maybe it was Fat Loss Myths. Yeah.
I think so. So, Harry, number one, you need to do fasted cardio, yes or no?
No, you do not. You need to do fasted cardio to lose weight. It's personal preference. Some people like to train unfed and that's fine. Protein intake is important, however. So nice. that's another topic for another day.
Okay. Well, you didn't put that on here, so we're going to jog on. Is that all right?
Yeah, we can totally jog on.
Okay. Our next female nutrition myth, yes or no, taking creatine will make me bulky.
Yeah. One of those ones that, you know, when I hear this a lot, and again, this is anecdotal, when women are starting to do weights training, one of the supplements that's really popular in weightlifting is creatine. So creatine is a substance that we make ourselves in our body. We get it from food. So we have it through diet. It's in our muscles, our cells. And at any one time, we're about 60% saturation, give or take, within the muscle cell. And it helps with energy production. So with the turnover of ATP, which is an energy unit. As we do exercise, we use up ATP. It goes into ADP, adenosine diphosphate, and it loses a molecule off it. And if we want to turn the used molecules back into the useful ATP, we need a phosphate group to be added back in, which is a bit techie, but bear with me. So we can do this at a relatively reasonable state, but if we have saturated higher levels of creatine in our muscles, that creatine can help donate that extra molecule so that we've got faster regeneration of energy in our muscle cells. Which means in a session, we're probably better able to get more reps out. We can go a little bit faster, go a little bit harder, recover better in between bouts of exercise. So you multiply that over the total of a year and we're actually doing, we've got more capacity to do more volume in our training, and that obviously leads to better outcomes, basically. So creatine is a really well-researched substance. It's relatively affordable for people who are serious about going to training. It's definitely one that you could keep in there relatively easily, safe, and it works for most people. So it's definitely one of those supplements that is really useful. But what there is an association with creatine is weight gain, and it's generally associated with water weight. So that's the first thing. Some people may put on, it's somewhere in the vicinity of half a kilo of a little bit of extra water. And it may be that this subsides once they get used to the extra creatine in their body. And it's not everybody who has this effect. So some people can take creatine and they will see no difference in their body weight. So the first thing is that, yes, it can.
It's about 20% of people non-respond. If I remember correctly from research.
Yeah. I'm actually not sure on the top of my head, but if you've read that, we'll roll with it. Then, you know, there's plenty of people who don't get that water weight. And then also we just need to remember that it's not fat mass that you're putting on. It is water weight, and it actually can help enhance your training.
So does that mean it's classified as lean muscle because it's not fat?
Well, it's not fat. It's not lean muscle either. It would be non-fat mass, fat-free mass. It might sort of increase the volume of the muscle, but it's not necessarily laying down new protein, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So it's just sort of a bit of extra water retention in the cell. So it's not fat mass. So basically, it's not going to make you bulky. And we sort of...
So that's a big question. Will it make me bulky? The answer is no.
No, it's not going to make you bulky. Not at all. Like, there is some water retention for some people, but again, it's only a small amount and it may sort of dissipate as you get used to it, as you adapt to using the creatine. So I think risk versus reward, you know, if I'm going to get some extra reps out, if I'm getting into my training, then creatine is definitely something that as a female strength athlete, I'm giving a big high five to.
Hey guys, this week's podcast is brought to you by the BSC Collagen Low Carb Protein Bar. It will be available in Woolworths in the sport and diet section. Harriet, we put 5 grams of Tenderfoot collagen in there just to make it different to everything else in the market, and we've kept it low carb, high protein.
That's really great news. I like that it's a portable source of protein. It's got that clinical dose of the Tenderfoot, which has been involved in some really great studies. So it's a really great way of supporting your tendons and ligaments whilst also having a delicious treat on the go.
And the extra good thing, Tenderfoot has just been voted the sports nutrition ingredient of the year.
That's a pretty good title.
Not bad at all. It's available in a bar. Get them at Woolworths. Harriet likes them.
Delish. Mm-mm.
Here's a big one, and we've probably all had a little bit more of this than we've had in the last couple of weeks than what we normally have, is we need to cut bread to lose weight.
Yeah, so this one is a bit of a favourite of mine because I am a sourdough.
You love your sourdough.
Aficionado. Yep, anytime, anywhere. And bagels. Bagels are probably one of my favourite pre-training snacks to have. Good old 60-gram chunk of carbs before training and I can get through anything.
Anyone listening just needs to know that Harriet does a lot of powerlifting. Is that the correct word to use?
Powerlifting, strongman.
Strong person.
Strong person.
Strong person.
Just like lifting weights. And
you
a lot
a lot of
rowing.
High intensity stuff too, don't you? But you don't tell your strong person people that.
No, you hide that from strong people and you hide the weightlifting from the other people.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, two worlds collide and everyone freaks out. But
so
yeah,
you eat a bagel before you train.
Sometimes, if I know it's going to be a big session, A, I love bagels, and B, it's great energy to get me through a session.
So is your mindset weight loss then, or you're just looking at I want to get through a good session?
Both. I mean, I'm not looking to gain weight.
Yeah, true. Because the question is, you need to cut out bread to lose weight.
No, you absolutely do not need to cut out bread. Now, here's a detail around that.
Walker all bread diet coming out next week.
Now, this is not where we're going with this. Again, it's the same with do I need to do fasted cardio to lose weight? Weight loss will occur when you're able to achieve a consistent energy deficit. So you don't need to cut out any specific foods. There's no foods that are more fattening. There are foods that are more energy dense. So per gram, they provide more calories. So if you eat a lot of those foods, you're going to be more likely to run out of energy budget faster.
Yep.
So that's one thing.
Feels good during the day.
Probably not feel as good. Again, we need to look at nutritional value of the food that you're consuming. So how many vitamins and minerals it provides you. But generally speaking, if you manage your energy intake, you can have bread. It's not inherently fattening. What is going to cause you to put on weight is just a general increase in energy intake beyond what you expend. So if I had a calorie budget to say maintain my weight was 2000 calories and I consistently ate 1800 calories worth of bread, I'm not going to be healthy because that's not a balanced diet, but I'm also not going to put on weight.
1800 calories of bread a day, that's almost a happy state, isn't it?
Oh man, I mean, I'm not sure if you'd be able
wouldn't
to
be long term. A couple of days later you'd be thinking, get me off this crap. But
yeah it's a really good strategy is to overeat the food that you really love and then you kind of get put off them a little bit. I'm not recommending that.
No.
But you can imagine that that's a lot of bread.
If any dietitians want to dial in now and have a crack at you, where do they go to?
At Athletic Eating on Instagram. Oh no, can of worms.
Yeah, send all the hate mail to her, not to us, please. So you don't need to cut out bread to lose weight. You just got to look at what you're eating, get your calories right and keep it all.
Yeah.
Talk to somebody who knows what they're doing if you're food planning.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Another question that was sort of related to this one, so we might actually just lump it together, was avoiding potatoes as well. And it's the same answer. I mean, yes, there's carbohydrates in potatoes, but unless you're overeating potatoes, unless you're eating 3,000 calories.
Let's pull out your stat that you put in one of our previous podcasts about the food that has the number one satiety rating from all research.
You read my mind. I was just about to bring that up.
Oh, were you? Sorry.
Because I didn't remember that. Oh, no. It was good. It was a good segue. So yeah, the number one most satiating, which means, enhancing the feeling of fullness, is the humble boiled white potato. So in fact, you may look at the humble potato as a weight loss tool if you want to stay full. And again, as long as you're not going on your calorie budget. And
week one on Harriet's new diet is bread, or week two is potatoes all week.
Breaded potatoes. So it's the Irish diet. So hopefully we don't do that because I think you'd get scurvy. Eat your fruits and vegetables and eat a balanced diet.
That leads into our next question we've been asked, Harriet, is you shouldn't eat fruit due to its high sugar content when trying to lose weight.
Yeah. Everyone's just on the carbs. Everyone's got a real phobia of carbs and it's really interesting.
Before we kick into that, why do you think we have a phobia of carbs?
Well, this sort of stuff comes in cycles. It's definitely like a 10 or 20 year cycle. There was a period in like the early 80s through to probably early 90s where fat was, fattening. No food, no one food or macronutrient is inherently going to make you put on weight accidentally. The foods that are more likely for us to overeat and therefore put on weight are the ones where we've got sugar and fat together, because that's a really killer combination.
Do you want to tell people why?
High palatability. our brain senses high energy. Yep. And because we are survival humans, we like surviving as humans, our brain knows inherently deep down in a lizard part of our brain that high energy food means survival. And so when we have this sweet and fat in our mouth, we know that's high energy, and it sends a message to the brain to say, reward, keep going, because this is going to keep us alive. Unfortunately, these days we have energy coming out of our ears, so we don't need to worry about going through famines in our society these days. It's not a threat as it used to be.
There was a bit of worry about that a few weeks ago.
Well, I mean, everyone's got a lot of toilet paper and pasta in their cupboard now, I think.
So it's okay to eat fruit?
Yeah, absolutely. 2 pieces a day, because we also need to look at the fact that fruit also provides us with fiber. It's high water content and there's lots of vitamins and minerals in that. We need to look at nutrition more on a whole rather than looking at single nutrients and demonizing them.
Okay. The fifth and final question that we've been asked is, you shouldn't snack. I don't really know where that came from or what that means, but that's what's been asked.
Well, people think that snacking is going to make them put on weight. And there's a little bit of nuance to this answer. So first thing is, there's no rules on how many meals a day you should eat. Some people enjoy 2 big meals. Some people like 3 square meals. Some people enjoy having, you know, 3 main meals and snacks. Lots of different combinations. But again, it comes down to what's your energy budget and how are you going to split that up across the day in a manner that helps you feel full, that you enjoy, and that allows you to get enough nutrients in from your food.
So on that snacking concept, is there any metabolic value in snacking versus non-snacking diet?
It's not necessarily going to rev up your metabolism per se. Mm-hmm. What happens when we eat food is there's this thing called the thermic effect of food. So we get an increase. It's associated with the energy cost of burning and digesting that food. So it costs energy for your body to take the food in its whole form and to break it down so that you can use it. And that process of breaking down increases our metabolic rate just, you know, for the period that we're digesting, and it'll go back down to normal. So I think the theory was that if you have regular meals across the day, that you would be stoking your metabolism and then it'd be coming back down again. But it's actually not a sort of a significant difference in energy output because of that. So it doesn't really matter if you have 6 little meals. In fact, you know, it might be good for you, let your body sort of rest and digest for a bit. The other sort of caveat to that is, again, and I bang on about it, but protein distribution is really important. So when I say that there's no rules for how many meals you should have, there is a pretty good research to say that if you're looking at putting on lean muscle mass, at least 3 square meals with around 0.4 grams of protein per meal per kilo of body weight, because we know that regular pulses of protein across the day, evenly distributed, will increase 24-hour muscle protein synthesis rates. So you could get away with 2 meals, if you're looking at building lean muscle mass, which, like, I mean, who isn't? Especially after COVID-19, I've definitely lost a bit of muscle.
Yeah, okay.
I'm a bit sad. I don't actually want to talk about it. It's emotional. But yeah, so protein intake is definitely one that we need to account for. So even if it was having, you know, 2 square meals plus a protein shake to make up the protein bolus, definitely doing that. And that's something that's actually a technique that I enlisted whilst in COVID-19, increasing my protein intake to try and hold on to my muscle when I didn't have weights to lift.
Sad, isn't it? Do you want to take a minute and just stay quiet for a minute?
We can just RIP.
Look at your eyes, are telling me the story of,
nothing there.
Well, Harry, thanks for coming on board today. That was a quick one, but a good one. 5 female nutrition myths. Is there anything you want to add to the end of this? Just a little bit of knowledge that we could all enjoy and wrap ourselves in?
Look, I've been talking to a lot of people post, you know, ISO, and I think the main thing is consistency. There's no one way to eat. Mm-hmm. There are many different ways that we can eat that everyone can enjoy, and it's around figuring out what your brand of eating looks like. You know, you need to eat a certain amount of nutrients to stay healthy. But within that parameter, there is heaps of different patterns of eating that will sustain good health and get you good results. So I would say try not to look at what everyone else is doing and do the work on figuring out what works best for you.
Nice. Good advice. And just in closing, what's a safe amount of weight loss each week for us to look at?
Generally, I prescribe 0.5 to 1% of your body weight. So that's nice and slow. Generally, that's associated with, you know, a very mild calorie deficit with some exercise and just looking after incidental movement as well. And that will generally result in weight loss that you can maintain.
Okay.
And maintain, maintenance is the goal.
Nice. That's 5 nutrition tips with Harriet. Thanks for coming on board, Harriet.
Thanks for having me. I'll catch you later.
Bye.
Today's podcast was brought to you by our partners in Fit, Happy and Healthy, ASN, Nutrition Warehouse, DY Discount Vitamins, Fat Burners Only, Evelyn Fay, Mr. Supplement, or find a retailer online at bodyscience.com.au/retailers.